Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of Honda and rock and roll. The spell you run da. Will be broken by Chris Jericho. The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. If you wanna know something, listen to my show. We've got something for ya. All you need to know. Oh yeah. Ooh. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Whoa. Woo. Hey, listen. You can't always play covers, all right? Sometimes you got to do original songs. That is the official original theme song of Talk is Jericho. Did you like it? I hope so, because I just made it up right on the spot. All right, Jerichoholics, how in the hell are you? Today, I've got the biggest trash-talking heel in UFC history. Chael Sonnen is going to be here. But before we talk to Chael, before we get into the show, let me kick it off by saying thanks to all of you who are supporting Talk is Jericho through Amazon. Yes, that's right. Amazon is a proud sponsor of this podcast. And every time you shop on Amazon through my links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of your purchases to help cover the production costs of this podcast. Amazon helps keep the lights on and the recording equipment working. It's the easiest way to support Talk is Jericho. Doesn't cost you anything extra. You don't have to buy anything special. You get the same great Amazon prices and service. And you know, it's hard to beat Amazon prices on these products, man. So to get my Amazon links, just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You might want to bookmark it so that you can get to it easily. I've got links for Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, and everybody's going Amazon, Amazon USA. I love doing this for you for free for twice a week, and I wouldn't be able to do it if not for you and all of my great, incredible sponsors, including Amazon. So thanks again for supporting the show and supporting my sponsors. Just got to go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Amazon and all of my sponsors reside there. Okay, and hey, one more big thanks to those of you who subscribe to Talk is Jericho on iTunes. If you haven't done that yet, I encourage you to hit that subscribe button, leave us a rating and a comment, and we will read them. We look at them, and if you're digging the show, tell your friends about us. Ah, just drinking some water here, man. I got really, really thirsty. Man, what a crazy trip I had this week. As you guys know, the whole thing of going to Australia. Like I said last week, we arrived in Melbourne, did the show, went to Sydney, did the show, went to Perth, did the show. Long, long flights. I tabulated it, 65 hours in the air over the course of a week. Sorry for drinking that water while I'm on the air here, but I'm super thirsty. So yeah, 65 hours or whatever it was, 67 hours, in the air
over the course of a week. So that's just crazy when you think of all that flight time. And, you know, the fact that when people go to Australia, usually they're there to go on vacation or go to work or whatever, but they'll get a couple of days to acclimate. Not us. We hit the ground running. Hit the ground running! And went right to work and took bumps. So had a great time over in Australia. Great tour. Got to see some old friends. John Howarth, very, very cool guy. Instrumental in helping Do You Want to Start a War get to number one in Australia on iTunes, on the metal charts and on the rock charts. And I think we were number 98 overall in the top Billboard Top 200 in Australia. So always cool to see him. But it went by so fast. It was almost like a dream. Like, we're just so jet lagged. And, of course, a few cocktails get involved. And it just seems like just one big, you know, misty memory. Also, got to see Daniel House, Talk is Jericho alumni, who is still achieving and attaining his goals day in, day out, and axed his fiance, Michaela, to marry him in the ring in Melbourne, which was great. And this was done, I took the idea, Daniel asked me about the idea, and I took it to the WWE Cognoscenti. Michael Hayes is the guy who's behind the house shows, the live events. He asked Triple H and Vince, and they both, you know, one or two of them, agreed. And then made up a really cool kind of a screen, you know, kind of a animated thing for the Tron that said, "Will you marry me, Michaela?" And she was totally surprised. And Daniel's daughter, Shakaya, was very surprised as well. So it was a really cool moment. And of course, he asked her to marry him, and the crowd started chanting, "Yes, yes, yes," which was so cool and so awesome. I think it was a real special moment. It's always cool when we can do stuff like that and kind of bring smiles to people's faces and make memories and make moments. I mean, those people that were at that show in Melbourne will never forget that night, a proposal live in the WWE ring. So really cool moment, and I'm really glad we got to do that with Daniel. And had a great time on Raw on Monday night. Did a kind of a really cool sit-down interview with Bray Wyatt. And this was kind of like, if you've ever seen the movie Heat with Pacino and De Niro, where they're like these two crazy killers or whatever they are, assassins, and they meet with each other to kind of set the rules of the game down. And that was kind of the idea that we had for that. So I even busted out the suit because I wanted people to look at this differently from just a normal promo and to see it as kind of a special thing, which is what it was. And it really heated up the angle. Big match at SummerSlam this Sunday, and of course Saturday night in San Jose. So if you're going to be in that area, come on down, see me. And then I got Raw in Las Vegas next week. I've got a signing in Las Vegas next week at Zia. That's Zed, if you're from Canada, IA. So come on down. Come see me at Zia. I believe it's at 12 noon. Go on the Twitter to find out all the information if you're in Las Vegas. And Raw was very cool. Hulk Hogan's birthday. And afterwards, flew home. Get this for a world championship lineup. Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Jerry Lawler, John Laurinaitis, Chris Jericho, all on the plane together. And yeah, we had a good time, man. Had a couple cocktails and shot the breeze. And you know, it's funny because you know, back in WCW, it was such a crazy time, and I was such a young guy. I didn't know really much about anything, and hadn't really established myself much. And Hall and Nash were kind of always nice guys, but never really something that I really hung out with ever, or really got any type of read on. And same with Hulk. I mean, Hulk was always cordial and always friendly. And I worked with Hulk, too, for months back in about 2002. But still didn't really, you know, I knew him a little bit. But, man, we had so much fun on that plane ride last night, just shooting the breeze and just being guys. You know, we're all just the same. And actually really, really enjoyed hanging out with Nash. Told some great stories and had some laughs. And also with Hulk, too. I mean, say what you want about Hulk, but he's still Hulk Hogan. And when you're hanging out with him, I mean, that was my hero when I was a kid. And the fact that I'm his bud, you know, we're hanging out, it just still blows my mind once in a while. And on top of that, you know, you think John Cena is well known, or you know, Chris Jericho or whatever. There's not another wrestler that's more recognizable than Hulk Hogan. I mean, I've never hung out in an airport with Steve Austin, or if I have, it's been a while. But we were in the airport waiting to board the plane. And I'd say in the 20 minutes that we were waiting to board, I'd say, no joke, probably 70 to 100 people came up to Hulk and asked him for his picture. I mean, literally every single person came up and asked him for his picture. And the cool thing is, Hulk took pictures with everybody. Every single person he took a picture with. And he's always been that way. He always gives people their moment, just like Ronnie James Dio taught me. Always give people their moment. And he did it, you know, and you can say what you want about him, but class act with the fans. You can tell he's a pure professional. He's a pro. And he, you know, he always gives people that little smile, you know, and gives them their shot. And it was funny, too. I had like two or three people come and ask me for my picture. And I was like, yes, see, Hulk, I've got three fans to your 100. So not bad. But Hulk and I had a really good conversation, and hopefully we'll get a chance to have more conversations in the future. He was asking me about Fozzy and asking me about the band, and I was telling him about the new record, Do You Want to Start a War, which still doing great. If you haven't checked it out yet, go buy it on iTunes or on Amazon, or come see me at one of my signings and come pick it up there. Lots of people liking lots of different songs. You've heard Lights Go Out here. You've heard Do You Want to Start a War and SOS and Tonight. But let's play another new song that you haven't heard if you haven't bought the record yet. And if you haven't bought the record yet, what the hell are you waiting for, man? This is a song called Unstoppable, and it's making people's top five lists when we're asking what their favorite songs on the record is. Features Christy Cook. And people are like, who's Christy Cook? Well, Christy's a singer from Atlanta. She's been in the Fozzy, Rich Ward family for a while. And when Rich had the idea to do kind of a duet and taking kind of what the Stones did or what Pink Floyd did, and having a female singer on the tune, have her sing the whole song, not just the chorus. And we discussed maybe she would get, you know, Lizzie Hale or Christina Scabbia or like one of the female singers du jour. And we said, you know, why don't we just get Christy? She's a great singer. Give her a chance to kind of get her moment in the sun. And she did such a great job that I even said, listen, we need to make it a Fozzy featuring Christy Cook. So if you want to know more about Christy, she's on the Twitter. Ah! And she's at I Am Christy Cook. That's C-H-R-I-S-T-I-E. So, yeah, and this I sing the entire song with her. So I got this real crazy Axl Rose thing going on. So check it out from Do You Want to Start a War? This is Unstoppable right here on TIJ.
I live by my own. Well, what'd you think? Pretty crazy, huh? That's super high vocals. Very hard to sing. One of the hardest songs to sing on Do You Want to Start a War? A funny story. I remember Zakk Wylde was telling me when they did the Osmosis record that they had a song on it called Thunder Underground, and it was really, really high, the melody line. And when Ozzy finished tracking it, the producer was like, Ozzy, you did a great job. And Ozzy's like, good, I'm glad you liked it, because you'll never hear me sing it again. And that's the way I feel about Unstoppable, man. It was so hard. Watch It'll Become a Huge Hit, and I'll have to sing it live every night. I will figure out a way, baby. I'll figure out a way. And I'll figure out a way to bring you Chael Sonnen. What a trash talker. And what a cool guy. And a very interesting story about how I met him on a Sunday and did this podcast with him on a Monday. So always be closing, guys. And always... got to show a little love to DDP and DDP Yoga, another proud sponsor of Talk is Jericho. As I've said many times, the main reason I'm still able to be in the WWE is because of DDP Yoga. That's why I'm back. I wouldn't be wrestling anymore without it. I do it 3 or 4 times a week on a good week, especially after a match or a long plane ride, like a 65-hour plane ride to and from Australia. And I've been doing it for years. But you don't have to be a pro athlete to do DDP Yoga. This workout program is great for people of all ages and all fitness levels. It's a cardio workout that improves your strength and flexibility, easy on the joints. It's low impact, people. And because you listen to my show, you sexy beast listeners of Talk is Jericho, you get a great deal on the Max Pack, 15 workouts. You get a nutrition guide, recipes, and a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga. You can even download the MP3 so you can work out wherever and whenever you want. DDP is making it easy for you to get in shape and stay in shape. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to you guys. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho, but this offer is not going to last forever. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of it now. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You can also find this great deal by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. Go do it now.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well, but I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway. So even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts. For coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
Talk is Jericho.
So you said that you're up last night for two reasons?
Okay, I was up for two reasons. Last night, I called all my buddies to tell them I sat next to you on the plane. My buddies are such fans. the coach at Oregon State, they just finished in the top 10 this year at the NCAA. Quick shout for them. But Kevin Roberts, his assistant coach out there under Jim Zaleski, went to WrestleMania's, the whole thing. He saw the Hall of Fame, and then he caught WrestleMania 30. You know, he's out there in New Orleans, and now he's got some killer stories from that, too. But I told him, I go, dude, you're not going to believe who I sit next to. I said, I sat right next to Jericho. And I couldn't even tell him I was coming to do this today, because he would have, I know him well enough, he'd have driven up from Corvallis and just sat over here and listened in. But I stayed up, and I caught American History X.
Great movie.
Unbelievable movie. Edward Norton, who I would argue is the greatest actor today. I would then second behind him, and I know we just lost him, but Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, great, yeah.
Amazing. But my buddy always argues Daniel Day-Lewis, and I'm not on board. Maybe he's a good actor, but I hate some of the movies.
See, that's
he's
the
been
thing
in,
to
so.
Me. A good actor is a good actor, but you got to go, what's the movie like? Is it an entertaining movie? Is it a good flick? That's why it's like – I always think, for me, Tom Hanks is one of the best actors because his movies are always good. Because
his consistency.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, maybe Daniel Day-Lewis is an actor's actor with the Master Thespian, but it's kind of some boring stuff, you know?
And if you were to just go off of reliability, and I will see your Tom Hanks. I will concede that. But Denzel Washington.
Denzel.
Yeah,
absolutely.
If you want to just talk about you, if he's in a movie, you can count on the movie. It's worth your $10, 2 hours of your life. Denzel Washington.
Now, how about DiCaprio?
Yes,
same vibe, right?
Yes, yeah. But has changed. See, I go back to Growing Pains, where DiCaprio. I think that might have been his television debut.
Did he play like he was like an adopted kid or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Or the nephew from out of town, you know, because the Seavers were growing up and they needed somebody young on there. And then you know he changed over the years, and he can do it all now. I mean, he can even play a badass. He played, you know, if you caught it was the movie of the year.
Just watched Django. On the plane from the, he was
okay,
great in that.
He was amazing in Django, but I hate Django.
You don't like the movie?
I hated it because the overuse of the N-word.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to think the gentleman that directed that.
Tarantino.
Tarantino loves to use it. He can make poetry out of it. Yeah. I will give it to him. But in Django, he was so obsessant with the doggone word, and it's like, okay, man, I get this. I get Hollywood. I'm not a prude when it comes to that stuff, but you got to lay off it at some point. You know, you're just saying it to say it. It's like Eddie Murphy with the F word. You're just saying it.
Or did you ever see that clip on YouTube of all the F words in Scarface? There's like 340 of them, so they just keep showing it like, F-F-F-F-F-F-F-Mother.
Really?
Yeah. And then they did it again with Wolf of Wall Street. Because I guess Wolf has more F words than Scarface does.
Okay, now you said something interesting. You said, I guess Wolf has it. Have you not seen Wolf of Wall
Street? I have.
Oh, okay. But I was going to say, you must stop everything you're doing and turn Wolf of Wall Street
on. It's amazing.
Right
I'm just talking about if you count the two,
okay.
Apparently Wolf has more F words than Scarface does.
In Wolf's defense, it was a 3-hour movie. Scarface was your standard 120 minutes, but
a little bit of a difference, right?
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, DiCaprio's amazing. I'll give that to him. Matt Damon's another, you know, consistent. Yeah, there's a few guys that are really good, but I just personally think Ed Norton can play. I mean, I've seen him play a priest all the way down to playing
Hulk,
a bigot,
the Hulk.
History
X with that curb stomping, one of the most violent scenes.
I wish he wouldn't have done that. I wish he would have done that. Yeah, there's a couple of scenes that have in my lifetime that have been done so well that I think I can't get them out of my head for a little bit, and that's one of
that's
them.
That's one, yeah,
stomp
yeah.
That poor guy.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. That was but you did mention that you told your friends that you were sitting next to me playing. This is funny how we met for the first time ever. I mean, obviously, you know your name. We've known each other through mutual friends. But we meet up on a plane coming from L.A. to Portland yesterday just as a total coincidence.
Yeah.
You know?
Just as a coincidence, yeah. Well, and it all started for me. I got to the airport. In the bar of the airport, I see Ric Flair. So I'm like, all right, I've got to go say hi. Yeah. So I go up and I say hi to Flair. And he goes, hey, man, I know who you are. He says, I saw you fight that black guy, and I got to tell you, I'm a big fan. He promptly then put his hand out and said, what's your name? Yeah. Right after the – right? Okay. Right. So
that's
that made my day, though. That was funny.
Chael Sonnen.
Chael Sonnen.
I bet you saw people call you Chael or Kale.
I was going to say whatever just came out of your mouth, I was going to go, yes, that's it.
That's
because
right.
I will answer to anything
Chael Sonnen.
Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
My mother used to tell people when I was a kid that it's like cheese and jail. Ch-ail. Yeah, that is kind of funny, isn't it? Especially for your mom. Like that. Wait, that's the comparison?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I get.
They were going to name me Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like the name Mike as much. They thought I'd get called Mike. So they took the last five letters, which is just C-H-A-L.
Right.
And so that is my – it's not Michael, and I've shortened it. That's the name.
Now, is Sonnen like Swedish or what is that?
I think it's German because Googled it, and there's like an auto group called Sonnenberg BMW. Uh-huh. And so I've just always made that assumption. But
same problem. My last name is Irvin. But it's Irvine, Irving, Irwin, no one ever pronounces it properly. So after a while, you just go with it. Yeah, Chris Irving. Yeah, that's me.
Sure, I'm over here.
And right, now my poor right kids now have the same thing. They'll call Irving and they don't answer. And then they'll say, why didn't you answer? My name is Irvin. You know, little 5-year-old, 6-year-old kids. But that's what happens when you have the name with a little bit of a weird spelling. You just got to go with the flow.
Yeah, for sure.
It must have sucked when you went to Disneyland when you were a kid. There probably wasn't any Chael keychains that you could
never
buy. Right.
And I always go to those things. Bumper stickers or, hey, I got a so-and-so on board. You know, those things.
Yeah, that's right.
Never. Michael. There's always a Michael, so I get close, but I never get a jail.
So you saw Flair in the bar.
Yeah.
And then get on the plane, and then suddenly all the guys are there.
All the guys are on the plane, which was cool. You know, I'm sitting down. And there's a lot of people you'll meet, particularly that spend time in L.A. And I have to live in L.A. about 4 days a week out of a hotel. That don't get starstruck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those guys, man. If you're on TV and I see you somewhere, I'm impressed right off the bat. It gets me, you know. And then you talk about wrestling. I grew up on wrestling.
Yeah, you're a big fan.
Huge fan. We only got a few channels, and NBC was one of them. Well, back when I was growing up, you'd pray for it all week long because we didn't have TV guys. We didn't have ways to find out what's on TV. But they had Saturday Night's Main Event. Mm-hmm. It would take place of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And my dad was into it too, you know, so we would stay up and it didn't come on till like 11. It got over about, you know, almost 1 in the morning. It didn't. And we were early people. We were from the country and we had to get up and feed animals and stuff. These were crazy hours to be up.
Right.
You know, if you were up in my household after the sun went down, you better have a good excuse. And anyway, yeah, I'd stay up all the time. And then Monday morning wrestling was on Saturdays at 10. And I can't remember what network it was, but even with our limited capacity of channels, we had it. And
it was called Superstars, I think.
It was called Superstars back then, yeah. And I remember the day that Demolition dropped their belts in a 2 out of 3. They lost to Arn and Tully Blanchard.
That's right. I remember that.
And my sister.
The Brain Busters.
Yeah, and my sister. The Brain Busters were a couple of cheaters is what they were. And they cheated in that match. And my sister came in the kitchen and she goes, "Oh, you're gonna cry? Cry. Why don't you cry?" And that when you're that age that I was, that's what makes you cry, is when somebody banters you and goes, "Craig, yeah, screaming." And my mom took my side. My mom comes in and goes, "Well, Reagan, had you watched the match? The referee was distracted over here and this guy used the..." And I'm like, "See, I told you they should still be champion." But anyway, yeah, man. So when the guys get on the plane, I'm just like, well, who can I text, you know? And I'm trying to snap a quick photo here and there and put my phone back down so that nobody knows. But, man, the guys were super cool. Rob Van Dam, I've never met, but he's like you. I feel like I know him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen him forever. We know mutual people. And he just came right up, and he's like, "Hey, Chael, where are you headed?" And we never did do the, "Hey, I'm Chael Ham." Never did that. We just started talking.
But that's the thing. You're kind of like I am. You're still a fan, but yet you have huge notoriety on your own. So I sometimes when I say, "Hey, I'm Chris," it's like, "Yeah." Like I remember I met James Hetfield. I say, "Yeah, I'm Chris Jacobs." "Yeah, I know who you are." And I'm like, "What? Like James Hetfield actually knows who I am?" And I guess like, well, why wouldn't he? If we kind of run in the same circles and we're kind of the same, you know, age and that sort of thing. But you never think that, wow, you know, that guy who I'm such a fan of would know who I am.
Sure.
And you were kind of like that yesterday introducing yourself, and I was like, "Yeah, we watch your stuff as much as you watch ours, you know?"
Yeah. But that's the one thing that makes a guy likable.
Yes.
Because I got guys in my business, too, that expect people to know.
Right.
Every one of them's a jerk. There's never like a nice guy that does that. Every time you meet a guy with that attitude, I mean, I got a buddy that calls himself a superstar. He'd be like, "Well, you know, when you get to be a superstar." And he was totally serious. And I felt awkward for him. Like, man, you shouldn't say that out loud.
Yeah.
People are not going to think that's fun. But, yeah, man, it was just amazing. And I had just been talking about Pro Wrestling Night before. I was with my buddy Brian. He's actually a media member. I call him Front Row Brian. And he was telling me about – I already knew the story, but we were just discussing the plane ride from hell.
Oh, wow.
Where, yeah. So
WWE plane ride from hell.
Yes. And so I'm telling him, like, "Hey, man, everybody seems to be in a good mood, but we got all the characters here for a plane ride from hell.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, and I'll explain it to my listeners that might not know what it is. This was about 10 years ago, and Flair and I were just talking about that throughout the course of this trip. We just went to Australia. It was a three-day, I don't know, 70 hours of flight time, and I happened to be sitting next to Flair a bunch of times, and the plane ride from hell came up. And that was this charter plane where all the guys were drinking, and everyone just went nuts, and Lesnar and Kurt Hennig were fighting next to the exit door. This is at 20,000 feet. They're fighting. I think Michael Hayes got his ponytail cut
off.
I think Flair was running around, with his robe on. And by the way, when Flair put,
at times, I understand it right.
When Flair used to put his robe on, there was nothing else on underneath. I think stewardesses were accosted. I think all the stuff was drank. At the end of that flight, there were suspensions, there was firings, and there was never alcohol allowed on a WWE charter again.
Wow.
The plane ride from hell, yeah.
The one thing about that I didn't know was that it was chartered. I always thought it was a commercial flight that you guys just by coincidence had taken over, that enough of you were on there that it was – that you made it your own private plane.
Yeah.
But from a legal standpoint and nobody getting handcuffed, that's probably what saved you.
How did you know that?
Well, I read about
just
it.
Just the rumors, you know, and
yeah,
hear about it.
I read about it somewhere. We got a guy in our industry – one of my favorite guys to visit with, but he is also in yours. He's a crossover guy, one of the originals, but Dave Meltzer.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know where I heard the story, but I would imagine I either heard it from Dave Meltzer or I heard it from somebody who heard it from Dave Meltzer.
Yeah, Dave gets all the scoops, man. He's always on the ball. He spies everyone.
He's made a living out of it.
He's got,
I think it's called the Torch Newsletter.
His is the Observer.
The Observer.
Yeah.
And he charges people to buy it.
He was the original, we call them dirt sheets, or they used to be called stooge sheets back in the day because it was like stooging off information.
Sure.
But there's still people that are like, you know, if you're seen reading an Observer, there's still some people that go, you know, Mark, read an Observer. But it's like reading Billboard magazine if you're in a band, or Hollywood Reporter if you're an actor. You're just reading kind of the statements and the inside workings of the business,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that's kind of what it was all about. But
you have to stay up on that
you
stuff.
Do.
Yeah, I read all that
absolutely.
Stuff too in our industry and in your industry, but you have to know what's going on, or that's just unprofessional. It's called being prepared. I would never go into an algebra test in high school and not study beforehand.
Absolutely.
So,
especially when you're talking about business numbers and pay-per-view buy rates and all that stuff, because if you're working, you know, if it's Sonnen versus Silva main event, you want to know, did we draw a million buys?
Yep.
Is that more than last month? Is it more than the last fight that we had?
Sure.
All that stuff. And a lot of guys just go, oh, it's okay, you know, I don't worry about that sort of stuff. Well, you better worry about it because it's business.
Yeah. Yeah, you had better know. Yeah, and particularly to your point in the WWE, because you guys are now a public company.
That's right.
You know, I follow your guys' stock every single day. I watch it. It's $11.92 on the 31st of last year, one day before, just happened to be the day I checked, so I remembered it was New Year's, went all the way up to $32.
It did.
And then when the TV deal and stuff stopped, you know, it had an adjustment, but it's climbing back up. It was at 13 and change this morning.
So you know your stuff. I mean, obviously, too, you're very outspoken. You know, you remind me a lot of Floyd Mayweather.
Sure,
whereas
money.
We worked with Floyd a while ago and met him quite a few times. Good guy, and he'd always say these outrageous things, and then afterwards say, "Listen, man, I'm just trying to get people involved in the fight. It's like wrestling. I'm just I'm saying these things to get people interested or get people mad at me because they want to see the guy beat me up. That's kind of how I drum up the business. Is that kind of how you got the idea, or not the idea, but you're very outspoken? I mean, I was looking up some of your famous quotes, and there's about 1,000 of them. You just say whatever needs to be said to get under people's skin, and that's very much a wrestling trick.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. On both accounts, not only for Mayweather, but for myself. And I'm a huge Mayweather fan. I know him personally.
Mm-hmm.
And he is putting on a show, which is pretty cool.
Right.
He has marked out for his own gimmick a little bit, though, as we say. Yeah. He has changed over time, and sometimes he forgets who he really is.
I think that $500 million or whatever he's got in the bank
will probably
do it to
you
a little bit.
Yeah. But, you know, I've felt myself do that over time, too. I've felt myself come out and go, yeah, where I'll get into something so much, or I'll get mad at an opponent, and pretty soon, you know, I can't stand this guy, and I just can't wait till the fight comes around, and somebody will level with me, my wife or my mom or something, go, man, why are you so upset with Anderson? And that one simple question just makes me go, well, I guess I'm not. Now that you say it, I guess I'm not. But I've said I am 20 times a day, every day.
But isn't that kind of your game? I mean, obviously wrestling is more of a show, whereas, you know, MMA, this is the real deal. And do you use these quotes and these things that you're saying to get yourself pissed off at this guy? Or
I think a little bit. I think at least for motivation to get into practice. Getting to the fight, there's always motivation fight night. Everybody's watching, your ego's on the line and all of these things, but... Man, getting through the training is grueling. Getting through the travel schedule, I'm preaching to the choir of telling you about that, but you know, you're living your life on this airplane. And I can tell you this, a little bit different dimension that we're talking about, though, but I almost get invited to nothing now. I'm like, I'll find out my friends are all out doing something after the fact, and they never invited me at all. And sometimes I'll ask them, well, why didn't you guys call me? And they go, well, you know, you're so busy.
Yeah.
We knew you couldn't come. It's like, I'm sitting at home when I'm not on an airplane somewhere because you all think I'm busy. And I'm just sitting at home hoping there's something to do. But no, it's true. You know, and some of it is the laws of attraction. There was a guy won an Olympic gold medal in wrestling that was the guy we all looked up to when I was growing up. In fact, there's two brothers, Dave and Mark Schultz. But Dave Schultz was famous because he was a terrible wrestler, couldn't wrestle a lick, and he put on his mirror, he wrote it down and put it right on his mirror, so every morning when he brushed his teeth and got ready for school, it said, I am the Olympic champion. And he just, and then he started to believe it. And then he started to act like it. Then he started to train like it. And in 1984, they put a gold medal around his neck. And he, but he attributes it all. Now, I know, I realize there was hundreds of miles ran and hard work and travel and blood, sweat, and tears. But he personally attributed it to that note, convincing. And you know, we can call it marking out for your own gimmick, but you can actually become somebody you're not. And when you do it in a very positive manner, it's a great thing.
I think Schwarzenegger had that too. I seem to remember he had written something. I don't remember the exact quote. Had written something down, some statement about bodybuilding or being the best or being a champion, never backing down, and had it like in his wallet. And every day he would look at that. But like you said, that does... your attitude and the way that you feel, the way you believe is so important into becoming a champion or becoming what you want to do. Because especially when you say, okay, I want to be a UFC fighter. I want to be a wrestler. I want to be in a rock band. There's going to be a lot of people that say, oh, you'll never do that. Why? Well, no real reason why, just because you can't do that. That's not how it goes. But when you have these sort of elements of belief and the confidence, and that's what you have when you're saying these statements, it's a confidence that you're bringing to the table. Now, how do your some of the guys that you've worked with, fought against at press conferences, when you're saying some of these statements, are they like pissed off, ready to kill you, or do they just take it in stride? What were the reactions you were getting? Because, I mean, like I said, I was reading some of these, and I'll bring up a few in a second, but... You're talking some pretty deep trash talking shit here.
Yeah, you know, it changed over time.
Right.
I, from that perspective, I revolutionized our industry. Now, it had been done before. Guy, you know, we of course had the Muhammad Ali.
All the way back to Ali, right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think superstar Billy Graham deserves a ton of credit and gets it. Right. I know there's a whole lot of stories there, but he was a real showman, and he says – that he was inspired and influenced by Ali. But, you know, there was definitely a change. When I started on the – mine was more of a negative shtick. You know, everyone's a bum. Now, I'm the greatest of all time. These guys aren't even close. That guy can shine my shoes. I said that about Brock Lesnar, and this is what I mean. When Brock Lesnar walks in the room, there's a presence, and nobody even looks him in the eye unless they think it's okay. And I said, I'd throw that guy in my boot. He'll shine my shoe. I'd smack him in his face if he was here right now. And people didn't know what to do. And I remember thinking, and I'm on stage when I'm doing this, but right behind the stage is all the guys, because the stage I'm standing on, once they clear it, becomes the weigh-in stage.
Okay.
So the audience is there for weigh. All the guys are right behind me, and they're all getting lambasted. So I knew the deal. All right, as soon as I go backstage, I go sit in the corner by myself because now I don't have any friends. And so I came off of stage. I remember we're in Austin, Texas. I give that Brock Lesnar quote and a million more. I go backstage to go sit by myself, and all the guys come up, and they're shaking my hand, and they're patting me on the back. And George Bush... When we invaded Iraq, had a UN meeting, and all the presidents of other countries were going out of their way to shake his hand and pat his back. Well, the reason wasn't because they liked him. The reason is they didn't want him coming to their country next. And so what I quickly realized was that I was like Bush and that these guys were coming out of their way to be nice to me, to stay out of my crosshairs. And but then, you know, some guy, I've seen a lot of guys have stolen from that angle too. And they're, you know, they're talking things up and doing it, and they'll come to me for advice. And I don't have a whole ton of advice to give other than don't make it up. If you're going to say something, make sure it's true, because you can put a guy over. And I got this advice from Stone Cold. Mm-hmm. And he said you can put a guy – you don't have to bury him. You can also build him up.
Sure.
Just make it entertaining as you do it. And I fought guys who I genuinely like and even look up to. I fought a guy named Brian Stan. Mm-hmm. I wrote his name in for the presidency twice. I voted for him in 2008 and in 2012. I wrote his name. This guy's a war hero. he graduated from the Navy Academy. He's an All-American. This guy's a really neat guy. And anyway, I said that. I said, but I'm going to give him a red, white, and blue ass whipping. You know, so I brought it back to the fight. But that's my one advice. You know, don't – the audience can see through crap, man. Don't give them crap. Give them entertainment. Don't give them crap.
I learned that years ago, back in about 91. There's this guy called Bulldog Bob Brown, and he was the booker of the company, the boss. And he was probably, I don't know, at the time I was 20, and he seemed like he was 90, but he was probably 50. And we were having a match together. He would always put himself against the young guys, and he would say you know, go do a promo. I didn't know anything about promos, but I'd be like, you know, Bob Brown, you're an old man, and you're an old guy, and I'm going to beat you up, and you're an old man. And afterwards, I remember he called me over and said, listen, let me tell you something. He said, you're calling me an old man. So when I beat you, and believe me, I will be beating you, you just got beat up by an old man. How bad does that make you look? He said, wouldn't it be better if you said this guy's got experience, he's a veteran, he's been around the world, he's won dozens of titles, but now his time has come to an end because I'm going to get him. And I learned that you got to put your opponent over before you tear him apart. Sure. Because if you beat him, then you're beating somebody. If you lose, then you're losing to somebody.
Sure.
You know, so little tricks of the trade. But I love some of these quotes that you had, how you're working with John – I say working. You're fighting John Jones, and named the John Jones special pizza, loaded with chicken and full of cheese.
Now, that actually happened.
I
own a pizza restaurant up the road. John and I were supposed to fight, and he refused the fight. First time in UFC history they had to cancel a show.
Wow.
He was the champ. That's the baddest dude walking the planet, and he refused to fight me. Now, there's very few things in my life that have gotten me the street cred
mm-hmm.
that him backing down from me did. Now, it didn't matter how many matches I won or a title or this or that. John Jones saying, I will not fight the guy, and them canceling the show
mm-hmm. –
put me over at that time more than any match I ever had.
Right, right. But like I said, like that is a great line. I mean, that's something that I could see. Like, here's another one. I don't promote fights. I pick fights. I'm better than John Jones. I'm better than Sean Combs. I'm better than John Holmes.
Ask around.
I mean, that's a Y2J line if I've ever heard of one. I mean, I could just see. I don't know how you would do it, but I see myself with a pen and paper. All right, John Jones, Combs. John Holmes.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
And then you know you've got it.
And you know you got
when it.
When
it comes to your head, you're like, I got it.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The one.
Yeah. But then, too, I mean, and people are very – and I know about Brazil because I got kicked out of Brazil 2 years ago for kicking their flag in a match with CM Punk, our mutual friend.
Wow.
Someone had a flag in the crowd. We were in Sao Paulo. And someone threw it in the ring, and Punk grabbed it and waved the flag, and people went, yay. Then I grabbed the flag, and I threw it on the ground, and I stepped on it, and I kicked it out of the ring. And the Brazilian army, who were the security that day, were not happy with me, to say the least, wanted to arrest me, take me to jail immediately. We were able to talk them out of that, but I had to leave the country that night. So I know how touchy Brazilians get with their nationalism and their
for
patriotism.
Sure.
But when you were working with I believe it was Silva,
well, yep.
You went after the country, you know, saying that I remember the one quote, is this a good one, talking about how you used to hang out with your friends, talking about technology, medicine, and gaming, and ingenuity, and Anderson and the Brazilian kids are sitting outside playing in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get in a lot of trouble for that?
Not only were they irate, but I gave that quote in Brazil.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Front and center at a press conference. I went in with Dana White. So we fly in on his private plane. They pick us up at the airport. They helicopter us to the event. Now, they helicopter us there because of all of the death threats that I've had.
Right.
And some of them were pretty specific, including the lake that they were going to put my body in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so some of them got specific enough that Dana's like, look, you're not leaving my press. And Dana's surrounded by some hard-hitting security guys sure. at all times, you know. So we're helicopter vets. We're doing this whole thing. So we get to this press conference, and he and I never he never ever to this day has talked to me about my interviews, what I do, what I don't. And a lot of people have come to him and gone, "Hey, man, you need to shut that guy up. This guy's giving a blemish to your company." And Dana goes, "He's a grown man. I'm not telling him what to say," and he hasn't. However, he did tell me after this event, he goes, "You know, you were with me. We came in together. I got to tell you, I really thought you'd be toning it down." And we're at the press conference when I hit him with, the Americans are coming up with gaming and ingenuity. And the Brazilians are sitting outside playing in the mud. And the whole room was silent. I remember seeing their reaction. I was expecting an uproar. I was expecting some stuff to be thrown, this great photo op moment. They are sitting there stone-faced. They can't believe what they just heard. Now, it took a few minutes later, once it processed, that then they kind of came after me. But it did not come right away. And, you know, to your point, I get that. In America, we are a little bit more relaxed. But we wouldn't want to see somebody step on our flag, man. I can tell you that. We wouldn't want to see that.
But I never even thought of it that way. To me, it was just part of the show. But then you realize, like, wow, that's kind of overstepping the boundaries. But also, you mentioned, you know, Dana never told you anything about your interviews, but I don't see why he wouldn't love that, because you're causing controversy, and controversy equals cash
every time,
you know. I mean, I could just see, like, shut this guy up already, or I can't wait to see this guy get his ass whipped, or I can't wait to see him beat Anderson Silva. But you're gonna watch the fight, and that's the most important thing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that was Ali's whole idea for existence,
the whole thing. Yeah. And you know, I wasn't around for Ali. I was born in 77. I think he had his last fight in 80, but was kind of out of his prime right around 77, right around when I was born. But my mother, who's not even a fight fan, is the one that told me about him. Not my dad. My mom told me Muhammad Ali saved boxing. She said boxing was going away. People weren't watching. This
true
is the
story.
Guy that brought it back. Mm-hmm. And I've read all of these things. And but yeah, I fully agree. And I've had plenty of opponents, you know, say, "Hey, he needs to quit talking. We do our talking in the ring. And they're serious." Mm-hmm. And I'm just going, "Man, guys, you just don't get it. You know, go enjoy your little sport of fighting. But I am in the fight business." Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. And at the same time, it's a good time.
Yeah.
It can be a lot of fun. You know, if you can work a crowd up, if you can get a guy to spend his hard-earned money that he spent on a Coca-Cola or on a beer, and he's going to throw that on me, I take that as a tremendous compliment. And my face at the time will be that of anger, disgust, and I'll walk through them. But inside, I'm going, "Man, I got them." And nobody in our business wants to be the bad guy. As tough as the guys are, as rough and tumble as the guys in MMA are, man, they're a bunch of sensitive guys. And they have to have, whether it's the people on Twitter or the fans when you walk into the arena, they got to have those pats on the back. And they all work so hard to be this really great guy. And I'm going to the opposite end. But I'm in the pool all by myself. Mm-hmm. Whether I'm a good heel or not, I'm the only heel.
Yeah.
So automatically, I become the greatest heel in the entire industry just by saying, "Hey, I'll take that role."
And like you said, it's a big knock to the ego when you get booed. Nobody likes to get booed. And that's why playing a heel, there's a certain, like you said, you have to have a certain mindset. Mm-hmm. To get the boos are a heel's cheers. You know, and to really get those boos where people are, you know, jumping the fences and wanting to fight you and wanting to beat you up, it's an art form, man, like
for
you
sure.
said, and not a lot of people want to take that responsibility.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's exactly right. I've seen that over the years from other guys and people that have influenced me. But there's even been some wonderful political figures. I get inspired by a lot of people, and I get compared to professional wrestlers most of the time. But I've been influenced a lot by politicians over the years, different politicians and different races, not even all the way to the White House, but where I've watched their interviews. And that's a fight. That's a verbal fight at all times. There's always a debate. There's always a showdown. And the psychology and the body language and the things used are, you know, it's quite fascinating. And there's a lot of things that you can learn when you're going into verbal warfare from watching political debates.
Yeah, because like you said, it's all a popularity contest, too, about who can put on the best show, right?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
I'm sitting here in Portland, Oregon with UFC champion Chael Sonnen. Now, you've talked about Dana White. I know at one point Dana said that you should be the guy who takes over UFC if he ever couldn't do it. Obviously, you guys have a pretty good working relationship, but now there's a few issues. Do you still talk to Dana, and do you have any kind of relationship with him at this point?
Yeah, I could get Dana. I could get Dana on the phone right now, and he's mainly a texting guy because he's in meetings nonstop. To explain how hard he works and how much he works is very hard to do. You'd almost have to see it. But, you know, I spent a week with him when we were doing some press, and we went out to Brazil for the Anderson thing, and we were in Atlanta for a couple of days when John Jones fought Rashad Evans. And we just had this whole trip where I was with him for 8 days nonstop. And he doesn't sleep, which I'm told is also a trait of Vince McMahon.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, to quote Dana White, I hate sleep. And he does not run on coffee. He never drinks coffee. Hmm. About once a week, he'll have an energy drink. If he's got a press conference or he caught some weird flight and he's got to do some stuff, he'll drink about a half of an energy drink.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, he's just on the go nonstop. And he's got a phone in each hand. He'll be in a meeting. I mean, this actually happened. I'm in a meeting there. We've got the chairman of the commission. We've got my attorney. His power team's there. He's got a phone in each hand where he's sending text messages and working. And then his secretary's coming in and whispering things in his ear, and he's writing things down, handing it back, and conducting this meeting at the same time. When I get up to leave, there's two more people in the queue, if you will, waiting for meetings with him. And this is just a day in his life. And you know, so many people look at what he does and go, I'd love to have Dana's job, and it's so glamorous. And it's like, you know, it takes a very special person to run an industry. He doesn't just run a business or a company or MMA. He runs an entire global industry, much like Vince. And yeah. Vince is a guy that Dana openly admires. And Dana does not openly admire very many people.
Well, they're very similar. Like you said, they created – took kind of like this, lack of a better term, a ballroom, barroom, smoky kind of underground thing, and made it into pop culture icon. You know, it's one of the most famous things, both wrestling and MMA, and to the point where MMA is probably even bigger than wrestling is right now. But that's due to the, you know, the work ethic and the ideas and the mindset of Vince and Dana. You know, so you can see those similarities there. So with what's going on right now, though, with your suspensions in the UFC, you did – that's where I saw you yesterday, because you were coming back from your fight in Los Angeles. But you've been suspended from fighting. So how did you get around that to go into what you did on Saturday?
Yeah, well, really close. I've been suspended from fighting for 2 years, which is accurate, which I don't dispute. But I had a wrestling match on Saturday.
Like a grappling match?
Grappling match. No strike. You know, grappling might be more fitting. I called it wrestling because I came from a wrestling background.
Okay.
It was put on by a group of jiu-jitsu guys, so sometimes we call it jiu-jitsu. But what you're talking about is just grappling. You're talking about going out and competing, you know, with a certain win and loss system that's put in place. But there's no striking of any kind. We don't deal with commissions. We don't do anything like that.
So that's the difference between that and an MMA fight.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. In an MMA fight, yeah, by definition, is a blow must be delivered with a reasonable intent to inflict damage.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten a letter from the commission that said, hey, we heard you're fighting next week. You know, you're not allowed to do that. And so I just let them know, you heard wrong. I'm not fighting, but I am involved in an event, and we're going to do some grappling. And if you have a problem with that, let me know. I won't do it. But we never heard back from them. So I think they just had some bad info that I was fighting. And they're not totally wrong there, because particularly Brazilians will call that a fight. Like, I came from a wrestling background. I call it a match.
Mm-hmm.
If Brazilians see that, they'll call it a fight a lot of times. And this was promoted by some guys from Brazil, and they do use that word sometimes. So the commission got some info. They reacted on it.
Kind of some blurred lines. So your suspension for 2 years is worldwide MMA fight suspension?
Worldwide MMA. Yeah. Now, okay. Per the law, it's, I mean, I could get a little bit more technical on that, but that is the deal that I made them, a verbal deal, and I'll honor it.
Okay. So, but you can still do the grappling, wrestling exhibitions. There's contests. There's still fights. There's still contests.
There's still contests, right, for sure. And the answer is yes. And I've got fantasies of 2016's coming up. I've got fantasies of trying to make an Olympic team.
Wow.
I tried it back in 2000 and didn't make it. And I was really good in 2000 and didn't make it. I'm not going to make it in 2016. But I think that it would give me a good reason to set a goal, a good reason to stay in shape. And those are my friends, too. You know, I go to the gym and work. That's how I socialize with people. The rest of the time, I'm sitting at home because my other buddies think I'm busy and don't call me. So,
that's right. Call back.
Yeah, it could give me something to do for a couple of years. But I'm retired from fighting. You know, getting suspended from fighting now is, you know, it's something that had to be done. I broke the rules. I broke the rules. The rules are clear. I broke them. You got to get punished.
Right.
And I was. And I'll... I will honor it.
Had you retired before you got suspended, or were they kind of one and the same together?
They were kind of one and the same. The timeline was I had got hit on a test. I got hit on a surprise test that was 44 days before a fight. Generally, in our business, we're tested fight night. And so whatever it is you're doing or you're not doing – you got to show up clean on fight day. And when I talk about being dirty, I'm not talking about steroids or illegal drugs. And I always have to make this distinction because if you ever, at least in our sport, if you ever fail a drug test, you are automatically taking something illegal and they were steroids. That's just the way it works in the media and the people's minds.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, hold on a second. First off, none of them were illegal and none of them were steroids, but I've never offered a defense. I turned in my prescriptions. Look, I got this from the doctor. This is valid stuff. But these are still against the rules. I knew it. I didn't think I'd be tested for another 44 days. I tried to game the system. And here's what happened. I didn't want to say anything that could water down my guilt. I thought it was really important when you're wrong, just say you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I was wrong. It's like, look, here's what I did. Here's the truth. You guys go sort it out. I'm going to take a nap. But let me know, you know, let me know what you decide, and I'll honor it because, you know, I'm a grown man. I knew what I was doing. A test was supposed to be 44 days. I thought I could have my cake and eat it too. Look, right. I can take this. I can feel great. And they did make me feel good. That's one of the problems I had is they go, well, these are performance enhancers. And I'm going, guys, why else would have I taken it? You know, I'm not showing up to the doctor and saying, Doc, you got anything to make me feel worse? Right. And if he says yes, Chris, that's malpractice. He can't give me something that makes me feel worse. It's got to make me feel better. And they did. And they said, listen, you know, you can't train that way. You can't. We got to do something with this. And I said, yeah, you're right.
Well, I mean, that's what a lot of people, I mean, I think they kind of understand, but I think there's always a little bit of, come on, they can't really be testing that heavily. But it's the same in WWE. The tests are real. They're random, and there's legitimate consequences when you get busted by them.
Yeah.
You know, I never have got busted, but one time, Black says I'm not taking anything, but I was diagnosed by my T ratio, which is your allowable level of testosterone. And our company is 4-1. Mm-hmm. I had 10-1, and the doctor called me and said, you have an elevated level of testosterone. I said, okay, well, I'm telling you, I'm not on anything. I know you probably don't believe that, but if I wasn't on anything, what could cause this? And he said, oh, you probably have a tumor. And I was like, what? He goes, oh, you probably have a tumor. Like, who says that to a guy? Like, what?
Relax.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you talking about? So I had to go to an endocrinologist, and basically they did all the tests to find out that I have a naturally elevated level of testosterone, just the way it is. So, but automatically, like you said, elevated level of testosterone must be steroids.
Right.
But it's not, so what could it be? Well, it has to be serious. Okay, fine. But what if it wasn't? Well, then it's a tumor. Or just a naturally elevated level of testosterone, you know?
And that's a real thing.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Thing. Yeah, Randy Couture, excellent fighter and a good friend.
Does he have that too?
He had that, wow. And he had to carry a note with him at all times.
Really?
To turn it in. Yeah, and I don't know if it was his T to E or if it was just his natural level. But you could just tell by looking at him, you know, the guy was a specimen, and there's some other guys that are just lucky. They're just born with the right genes. And, he had to actually carry a note.
Like a doctor's note.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of your greatest fights. The one that I watched yesterday, I was talking to Van Damme because he was mentioning to you the Anderson Silva fight. And I was like, so tell me about the fight. He's like, oh, dude, it was such a great fight. So I watched it. I mean, and you were on a roll for that whole fight. 4.5 rounds out of 5. You had his number. And that guy was one of the greatest of all time. And then the last second, he caught you with a quick one, as we say in wrestling. He rolled you up, 1, 2, 3. Yeah. But, I mean, that must have done huge, huge wonders for your career because that was a great, great fight.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that and taking the time to watch it. And it did for both of us. I'm sorry I'm sitting this way for the listeners.
He's got his feet up on the table.
I got my feet up on the table. It's a back issue. It's not a hey, rude, you're sticking your feet in my face issue. My back drives me crazy. I can never sit still. I got to do this on airplanes, too. In fact, I was behind you yesterday. I was afraid you'd think I was kicking
you. You were. I didn't want to say anything.
I had to keep on putting my feet.
I didn't
up
want to hear anything about a Chris Jericho pizza later on. So
yeah, exactly. My lower back's driving me nuts. But it helped both Anderson and I. And our whole industry was revolutionized a little bit that night by the buildup for that fight and the way that everything came out and the massive pay-per-view numbers they did. They always have a projection, the UFC, for how much they're going to do.
Right.
And they're good. They're good, effective analysis. And we did exactly double.
Wow.
Exactly. So they basically got two shows in one.
What were they expecting to do?
They were expecting to do just under 400,000. They did just under 8.
Wow.
And at that time, well, even now, if you do 800,000 buys on any pay-per-view, that's a very successful number. If you break a million in the pay-per-view business, I mean, that's where the president of DirecTV calls you up and says, "Hey, great job, guys."
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
So we didn't really have a big supporting cast.
That was basically just from your fight.
It was just from us. Yeah, and I whoever our co-main event that was, I hope they don't think I'm sliding them right now, but I don't even remember what the co-main event that night was. It was the whole thing was built up just around us too. And that was supposed to be a squash match. He was supposed to come in, I'm just the next guy that he can beat up because his contract is he's got to fight every few months and they need someone to go out there with him. And so everything got changed. I remember at that time, just to speak how far our industry's come, but we had only had one guy make the Jim Rome show ever. Mm-hmm. Jim Rome's the
famous sports analyst. Yeah,
as far as radio goes and sports, Jim Rome's the guy in this country. His ratings are through the roof. We had one guy make Jim Rome, and it was Brock Lesnar, and he got on for 2 minutes and 44 seconds.
Not the most verbal.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
Guys, yeah.
But that's a huge spot. You know, the UFC made it on Jim Rome, and it was Brock. He got 2 minutes and 44 seconds. So the PR person actually has this, and they tell me that. They're like, look, this is what Brock got. It happened one time, so you're going to be in and out of here. Jim's going to introduce you, and he's going to kick you off the air. And we end up having almost a 5-minute piece. Yeah, and so, you know, it was pretty good. And I told him a lie. He had some clip of me saying something that was controversial. It's about Lance Armstrong.
Right.
Taking drugs, taking performance-enhancing drugs, giving himself cancer.
Giving himself cancer.
So Jim plays it, and it's me talking just like this, and he plays it. And I'm like, Jim, I don't know who that is. And he's like, wait a second. You're saying that's not you? And I'm like, maybe I've got a bad reception, Jim, but that guy sounded like he had a Hispanic accent. I couldn't even really make it out. So now Rome has to play, you know, detective and prosecutor and prove that it's me. Well, it's clearly me.
Right.
And he's like, you know, so years later, we've become buddies now. And he's like, but why would you lie about it? I'm like, Jim, I'm a bad guy. Okay, I'm the bad guy. Anderson Silva is the one the crowd cheers for. I'm the bad guy. Bad guys lie. That's why I did it, Jim.
And plus it gave you 5 minutes of airtime on his show.
Plus it gave me 5 minutes of airtime. Yeah. It's like, yeah, Jim, don't get too caught up in this, man. I'm not under subpoena. When I come out and I tell you a story, I'm going to tell it however I want. Now, if I'm under oath, it's a different deal.
Were the fans pissed off?
Oh, they were furious.
Yeah.
Some of them, a lot of them were defending me.
Yeah.
A lot of them were going, no, man, I don't think that was him. I mean, I didn't hear the Hispanic accent, but it wasn't him. I was doing strength and conditioning at Nike, and Nike's from right. I mean, we could go out your hotel here and see it, the absolute world compound. They shoot their commercials there. You know, Mayweather and Tiger Woods and LeBron, all these guys are always coming through there. really, really big deal. And the guys at Nike defended me. So they go into one of their high-tech, multi-million-dollar studios, and they start breaking down the Hispanic version of Chael versus another Chael, and they found a glitch. They were going to clear me. They were going to use their money and resources and put their name on me to defend me. I'm like, hey, guys, you need to back off this quick. It was me. Like,
they believed you.
Yeah, they believed me. How could Jim Rome say this was Chael? I'm like, well, because it was. Hey, guys,
Hispanic
slow down
accent.
A second. Yeah. I'm like, this is what bad guys do, okay? bad guys tell lies.
So that's what we're talking about. I mean, just the fact that you have all of this big personality, very, very polar. Some people love you. Some people probably hate you, think you're tarnishing the sport. But meanwhile, you're bringing the sport to levels that it's never been before. I mean, look at MMA UFC from 95, 96 to now. It is a legitimate big time, one of the biggest sports in America. Didn't start out that way. A lot of that has to do with the mainstream acceptance from the personalities like yourself. You did a lot to help bring the sport to the next level, I would say.
Yeah, thank you for that compliment. I'm thrilled to be part of it. But there is a big deal. And, you know, Dana White talked about this one time. He said, you know, when I started this business, the first thing I looked for was characters.
Mm-hmm.
My plan was, let me find some characters, some people that people will tune in for, so I can keep this thing moving forward. And eventually, I'll then get to some really great fighters.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's built a big enough machine now. The guy's a media mogul at this point, you know, whether it's radio or six different TV shows that he produces, magazines, and he's got the toys, the video.
Monthly
the whole
pay-per-view,
bit.
Yeah.
Pay-per-view, sure. But, now it's big enough that he's got guys in the company that don't even speak English, and he can sell 500,000 pay-per-views with them because he can just take over. He says, as he puts it, I bring the bells and whistles. Well, he does a lot more than that, but that's how he always downplays things. I bring the bells and whistles. You guys just give me a great fight. So, but you're right. You know, it is about characters, and
sure
it is about bringing a lot of stuff forward. And you know, I'm a big boxing fan, but boy, I don't know if I could name five of them.
Not anymore.
I could definitely name Floyd.
Yeah, exactly. Floyd and Ali and you know, Tyson and those type of guys. But and it's the same with hockey. I mean, a big hockey fan. You used to get a guy like Tiger Williams or Ty Domi, great fighters. And when they were finished their fights, they would like make the motion of the championship titles, or they would yap it up, or they'd say crazy stuff because they were characters.
Right.
You know, obviously, pro sport, team sports doesn't like that as much. But as far as UFC or wrestling or boxing, it's about the individuals, you know. So when you get a pay-per-view where you mentioned where you were scheduled or whatever, 400,000, 800,000, do you make your money off the bonuses off that? Is there a certain guarantee that you get? How does it work as far as a big pay-per-view fight to get paid off?
Short, yes. The way it will work legally is you'll have a contract. It's called a bout agreement, and each one of the state commissions will require that it's in writing, and then they will have the promoter put up a bond to make sure he pays. And there's good reason for that. There's plenty of promoters, particularly of yesteryear, that would just run out of town with the gate, and you'd never hear from them again. They wake up the next morning in Germany. So, you'll have a bout agreement in our industry. You always get a show purse that's guaranteed, and then you get generally it's a matching. If you get $50,000 to show, you're going to get $50,000 to win. And that's how it works. Now, the way Dana White works, he will negotiate those hardball. You know, get up and leave if this is my offer type deal. Then the guy is so generous, he'll just mail you a check. He'll never even tell you it's coming. You'll go out to the mailbox one day, and it's like that old Toyota commercial where you jump up in the air and you're holding the
freeze frame.
Yeah, you have one of those moments, and you're sending him a thank you. When I first got into the UFC, so I'd never been part of this bonus structure, I get in, I go over to England, I get rolled up in like 2 minutes. I got beat so quick by this guy named Damian Maya that I forget it even happened. I blocked it from my memory. It was just such a terrible experience. And a week later, a certified letter shows up to my mother's house. I must have written my mom's address down on something. And I'm driving. She calls me. She says, hey, the UFC just sent you a certified letter, and I just signed for it. She's like, there's one piece of paper in this thing. So I'm like, So I pull the car, because I know I'm fired. Obviously, it's
a pink slip, right?
I pull my truck over, and I'm like, just open it and read it to me. Well, there was a check inside. And I said, for what? And she says, all it says is bonus. And
You know, so I quickly get a hold of Dana, and he says, well, yeah, you fought hard for us. So so this is just how our industry works. Now, he will sit you down, and he's a businessman, and I think he enjoys the hustle of it. I think he enjoys negotiating and going back and forth because he does it as well as anyone I've ever been around. But then he'll go, well, you know, this is what you really should have gotten, and he'll just send you the money. Now, there are certain guys that are actually in on the pay-per-view where that's established ahead of time, but that's very few. He likes to kind of figure it out afterwards because he doesn't know. He's got a formula. I've never been privy to what it
is. Gotcha, sure.
But he doesn't know how. Look, I got to put $10 million into marketing this fight, or I got to put $7 million in. So he kind of needs to balance it after the fact, but He does make it right with
the bonuses.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned you're suspended for 2 years from UFC, still doing grappling and all that sort of stuff, but you're obviously a WWE fan, influenced by that. Have you ever thought about doing anything with the WWE?
I've had those fantasies, particularly when I was younger. Uh-huh. When I was younger, I had a lot of those fantasies. In fact, I got a call about 2 days after I was suspended. WWE executive calls me up. And he says, hey, we read what you're going through. We just want you to know we're not interested. Well, why'd you call me? You know, that's what I'm thinking. This is kind of a new phone to me. It's kind of a new number. Yeah. Like, you had to go through some work to get my number.
Right.
And so I said, thanks. He goes, you know, listen, if you're 24 years old, we give you a contract. You'd be making a whole jackpot full of money. That's the term he used. He goes, you know, but at your age – we just don't want you. And so I'm just thinking, why did they call? And then comes why they called. They go, but we think TNA is going to be calling you. And if they do, then we want back in the game.
Wow.
And so
really?
Like, yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, this was, at least I get why you called, yeah, you know. Yeah, yeah. At least now I get it. But I kind of just chalked that up to a fun story. And I went through the power plant.
Did you?
Yeah, the WCW power plant. Yeah. Sarge was running it, and when I say I went through it, to qualify that a little bit better, I did the tryout.
Mm-hmm.
There was tryouts that used to be advertised during the WCW programming on Monday night when Monday Night Wars were going on. And so I called the number up, and it was this Atlanta number, and they sent me a packet, and I filled it out, and I fly out there to Atlanta. And all they do in the tryout, it was 3 days, is they just try to make you quit. It was like, right. You know, I was like Navy SEAL training, and I say that as a compliment to our SEALs. But the deal with SEAL training is, here's what we're going to do, and anytime you've had enough, just say, we'll get you out of here, but you can't come back.
Right.
And it was so hard for me to explain to you how hard this was. I was an All-American that year in college wrestling, which is so, so difficult. I just come off that season. I'm in great shape. This was the hardest dang 3 days. All we did is three things. We did push-ups, sit-ups, and squats. And they put a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket. Sarge flips this thing upside down, and when you do your squat, you've got to come up on your toes, throw your hands up, and your butt has to hit that bucket. I did so many squats that the little ledge of the bucket was cutting into my butt. It hurt so bad. But if you miss the bucket, you miss the squat. You're out. You must hit this damn bucket. Yeah. And, you know, you're doing for 3 days. This is all we did. 8 hours. We got a lunch. Come back the next day, 8 hours. Again, there was a 30-minute lunch. And then on Sunday, it was short. But by Sunday, there was only me and one other guy from Jamaica left. Everybody was gone. So anyway, I went through that, and I got the invite. I was going to go back, and I was small at that time. That's when Rey Mysterio was coming out. This was just before you changed everything and said, hey, listen, you can be a smaller guy and still be the best guy in the world. You know, it was just before that. It was in 1998.
Right.
So if you were my size, which I was about 196 pounds, you had to be the high flyer, which I didn't want to be. I wanted to be Hulk Hogan. I wanted to grab a wrist lock. I wanted to work the crowd. You know, I wanted to throw a right hand. And they're just like, yeah, that's not going to work. But, you know, we can get you into some gymnastics and do some stuff. By the time I got out of college, they were closed up.
And that was it, yeah.
And that was it. And the next time I hear from anybody, they're calling to let me know, we don't want you.
You did have a pretty cool high spot, though, on Michael Landsberg's show, a good friend of mine, off the record, when you actually were seeing if you and Punk are good friends, mm-hmm. and you wanted to see if Punk was going to have a match, yeah. so you wanted the fans to call Stephanie McMahon directly, and you gave her cell phone number on the air.
Yes.
Now, two things. First of all, I don't have Stephanie's cell phone number. I don't even know how you got it. And second of all, what kind of feedback did you get from that?
So I got sworn to secrecy from the guy that gave me the number, and it was not Punk.
Okay.
To say who it was not. And so I told Punk, hey man, this is what's gonna be coming down, you know, so just in case you get some backlash, but I'm pissed off about it. And here's what I did.
You're pissed off that he wasn't in the company?
Yeah, that he wasn't in the company. And then they went to Chicago. As he's going through this whole layoff thing, I think he's working everybody, including me.
Right.
You know, because he's blowing me off on text message too. Oh, I'm
me too.
Tired of the rat race. That's the term he keeps using. And when he hit it to me like three different times, I realized, oh, you must just be sending that to everybody. You forgot who you've sent
cut
it to.
And paste,
you've
cut
said,
and paste.
Yeah, you've sent it to me so many times. So they go to Chicago, and I'm certain he's going to be out there. When he doesn't make the walk, you know, when his music never came on, I thought, man, there really is something more to this. So anyway, I went out. I did that. I held up Stephanie McMahon's number, her private cell phone number.
And they showed it on the air.
They showed it on the air, but they blurred it out.
Oh, did they? Okay.
They showed the piece, but they blurred it. But I go to the parking lot of the studio, and I told Punk what I did. And he's like, no, you didn't. He's like, no, you would never do that. And I'm like, oh, no, you're not understanding me. I'm not telling you what I'm getting ready to do. Like, I'm not calling you for permission on this. I'm telling you what just happened, and it's going to air tomorrow at 11 a.m. And so Landsberg actually calls the number to make sure. And I don't know who he did. He told me that he actually talked to Stephanie. Now, whether he did or not, I don't know. But Triple H did get involved. It got all the way to him, and Triple H sent a message back. And Landsberg played. But for me, I'm going, this is cool. You know, I'm in. Like, this is fun.
I guess we'll find out, because I got tickets for you tonight. And said to put them under your name. So I guess we'll find out how mad they are at you.
We will see. Won't we? We'll see how when I get
If you
there.
Get there and there's no tickets, I'll have to bring you through the back door.
That I'll also think is funny. I'll be like, oh, this is perfect.
Another story for you.
This is
another
great.
Story for you. Have you, I mean, I know you did commentating and stuff, and now that you're suspended, you can't commentate it either?
Well, I can commentate. There's nothing against that. But, you know, again, when you get suspended for failing a substance test, you're taking illegal drugs and you're mm-hmm. taking steroids. I mean, it's just the way it works. And I don't have the breadth or the platform to explain, like, hey, guys, cocaine is an illegal drug.
Right.
Like, man, I'm on medication from a doctor. Now, these are medicines that are against the rules. I was trying to game the system. I didn't think I'd be tested for it. I'm beat. I'm wrong. However, when that happens, you know, and particularly when you're dealing with a public company like Fox, which is just
– gotcha.
Can't say enough good things about those guys, but they are a public company, and PR comes first. They've got to do this. They've got to put you out of arm's reach. And I had a boss down there named George who – you know, when you're in the Fox family, and people in business love to use that term, particularly when it's time to do a contract to get you to take less money. But there are some times where it really is true. You know, the UFC really is like a family. Mm-hmm. Dana White will go to bat for you, even when you're wrong. Mm-hmm. If you're his guy, you're that, and that's it. And he'll take it on the chin, but he will not leave a guy behind. My boss down at Fox, a guy named George, was the same way. And he was fighting tooth and nail. And they wanted a head on a platter. You know, they wanted a head on a platter, and you know, and it was worse too, because I had essentially lied about it. They said, hey, you know, what were you taking? And it's like anybody that wants to come clean, but you're ashamed. When you add shame to a scenario, it's hard to tell the truth. And it's like, you know, I really want to tell you, but I'm embarrassed, man. Yeah. I was trying to get around the rules, and I'm clinging to a sport that I should have left years ago, but I just can't because I'm having anyway. So when you add shame to it, it's just really tough. So he's fighting for me tooth and nail. I just call him up. I said, look, I appreciate your loyalty, but now it's time for me to be loyal to you. I'm stepping down.
Mm.
You know, and I had a contract with these guys and where they would have to, you know, pay it and see it through. And again, I wasn't taking anything illegal. So
sure.
From me, I'm getting technical now. I'm wrong. I'm completely wrong. I'm not trying to water down my situation. But to tell the story a little bit, they couldn't fire me over it. I got it from the pharmacy. I'm working with a doctor. And I said, no, I'm out. You're not getting sued. I'm not coming after you for anything. I'm wrong.
You don't
want to
drag them through the mud.
Yeah. And I did wrong. I'm wrong. That's how that's the end of it. Be a man and walk away.
So what do you do then for the next 2 years?
Well, you know, I got into this grappling thing, and I am taking a look at the 2016 Olympics.
Right.
Which, again, you know, my goals would be different. Anybody that's going to put their life on hold to make an Olympic team's going after that gold medal, I'd be going after about fifth to sixth place just within the
country.
Just
to compete.
Yeah, just try to get on the stand and be one of the guys. Something to do. You know, I'd have a little bit different goals. But, I don't totally know, and things change quickly. And people are pretty forgiving when somebody's honest with them. You know, when they come out, it's the guys that dug their heels in. It was, I know Lance is in the forefront, but he should be for good reason. He tried to protect this secret so hard. It's like, hey, Lance, don't be afraid to just tell people what happened. Look, I found something that made me better at my job. Oh, I get that. Now, we can also have a discussion that you weren't allowed to do that.
Yeah.
But I get that. It's, you know, he started suing people, and he got pretty vicious, and he bankrupted some people by taking them to court for slander, and it just turned into an ugly thing. And I think if I could ever advise somebody that ended up in my shoes, man, just come clean. Come as clean as you can, as quickly as you can, and then let them decide. Sort it out from there. But go move on with your life.
Right.
You know, if you got to do something else, then you got to do something else, man. That's it.
So last two questions. Your favorite fight that you ever had?
Favorite fight I ever had would be I fought a guy named Yushin Okami. He was at that time, he was the last guy to beat Anderson Silva. He was ranked number 2 in the world behind Anderson, even though he had defeated it. And he defeated him by like a disqualification. There was a little more to it. But so he held the number 2 ranking, and I was ranked number 9 in the world. But I wasn't budging. I wasn't going to get to number 8. I couldn't get my opportunity. I couldn't get enough camera to just all the stuff that you need to elevate. So anyway, I fought this guy named Yushin Okami, who is now one of my best friends. But I had the performance. It wasn't just winning that fight. It was the performance. It was just, you know, I got done with the fight. I'm thanking God. Like, man, what? That was just a really good night. Yeah, I landed my shots, landed my takedowns. And it was a fight that very few people saw. Even though we were both ranked top 10 in the world, it wasn't in high demand by the fans. It didn't get put on television. Dana ended up cutting it into the feed and did put it on pay-per-view, but it wasn't supposed to
be. Wow,
okay. So it's two top 10. I'm fighting the number 2 guy in the world that just beat Anderson Silva in front of nobody. my aunt and my mom were in the crowd, and I could hear them yelling. That's how empty the Staples
Center. Go, dear!
Yeah.
Go,
yeah,
son!
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's how empty the Staples Center was. But that was probably my proudest moment performance-wise.
Yeah, and that's always the way, too. Like you said, I mean, I'm sure the Silva one's the one. I mean, it won fight of the year, and it's got all the glamour and glitz. But sometimes it's the smaller, you know, we call them house shows at live events, not even on TV, that you have your best matches.
Yeah.
And that's just how it goes sometimes. But speaking of matches, what's your favorite pro wrestling match that you ever saw?
Well, my favorite match would be tough. There's so many great ones, but in my opinion, the biggest match of all time, and people discuss this, and I just don't think there's a conversation here. I think the biggest match of all time, Intercontinental Champion Ultimate Warrior versus World Heavyweight Champion Hulk Hogan.
Ah.
That has to be, without question, the biggest match of all time.
WrestleMania 6.
WrestleMania 6, yeah. You know, and then particularly with the Warrior leaving and having both belts, I don't think that had ever been done. They never put an Intercontinental in it. Yeah, it had never even been done. I did not see that outcome. I, to this day, resent that outcome.
Well, and also, too, it was a really good match. Warrior wasn't known for being a great worker, but that's one of, in my opinion, one of two of his like 4 or 5 star great matches.
Hogan isn't known for being a great
but for whatever reason, that one just they caught lightning
and
in a bottle.
Length.
That one,
they were able to stay out there more than 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
What Warrior beat Honky Tonk Man 31 seconds or so, is that what it was? You know, so yeah, that I think that was probably the biggest match of all time. I don't know that I enjoyed it the most, but as far as memories go, I think that those guys deserve some credit. Out.
Well, man, like I said, it's great. I'm glad we ran into each other on the plane yesterday. And,
I'm disappointed this is over, man. I'm having
a
great
fast.
Time.
I know. Yeah. It's been
You've
an
been
hour.
Asking all the questions. I didn't get to get into Stu Hart's dungeon. I didn't get to, you know, get to find out okay, tell me one question. This
Ask me a couple questions.
Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Okay.
I know he's from Stu's dungeon. I think he even married into the Bret Hart family.
Yeah, Natty's his daughter.
What's Natty he doing now?
He lives in Florida, I believe, and not you know, a lot of the guys, I'm sure it's the same kind of in your sport. They kind of don't really do much. They're still kind of working high school gyms from time to time, you know. Not sure if he really saved his money too much. I don't really see him around too much, to be honest with you.
But he's involved in the business in some fashion.
Yeah, but probably just working indies. You know, once in a while you hear like there's a, you know, in Tampa there'll be like a Florida Marlins 7th inning stretch wrestling match. It'll be like, you know, Brutus Beefcake, Jim Neidhart against like the Nasty Boys with Jimmy Hart as the manager or something like that. You know? But yeah, I haven't heard a lot about Jim lately. I mean, obviously Natty's his daughter and she's doing really good. But from time to time, she'll mention his name, but probably just, you know, just doing whatever, I imagine, you know?
Now, when you deal with true catch wrestlers like Stu Hart, mm-hmm. all the reports that come out of his dungeon, man, they're painful.
Yeah.
All the reports are basically pain-based, where he would manipulate guys. And it comes back to what I was saying about the WCW power plant, where they're just trying to get you to quit. Well, that was my take when I read
exactly
it.
That's exactly right. Especially those the old school mentality of weeding out the guys who they weren't sure really wanted it. And I think for us, it was probably a week to 10 days to 2 weeks before we even got in the ring. And if we did get in the ring, it was just basically to stretch and do, I remember, 500 hack squats a day, lots of stretching, running a mile backwards. Huh?
Sure.
What? Nutshot practice was a good one. You know, just stuff like that, just to weed. And our camp, like you said, started with about 15 guys, and then it was like a Jason Voorhees Friday the 13th movie. People would just disappear one by one. You know, someone would take a weird bump, walk out, we'd never see him again. We'd show up on a Monday after the weekend off, two people would be gone. What happened to him? We never found out. So it ended up just being me and Lance Storm and one other guy that finished that camp out of the 15 that started. But for the first few weeks, it was just weeding out the pretenders and the guys that thought it'd be cool to be a wrestler.
Sure.
You know, but that was the kind of the mindset there.
Now, Lance Storm strikes me as a guy that was pretty smart with his money. I don't know how much he held on to, but he's running a wrestling academy
Runs
now.
A wrestling academy.
Seems like a clean-cut, smart guy.
Very much so.
Some of his tweets,
huge,
he seems real straightforward.
Huge UFC fan. Yeah, but he's very, very good trainer, too. Very good trainer.
Now, from a business standpoint, let me go back to Stu Hart. Was Stu a guy that was just coaching guys because this was his love of it? Or is there, when it's all said and done, does it go, all right, listen, as you move forward for the next 5 years, I get 10%?
Well, that was the original. Like, when I started the Hart Brothers camp, Stu had already pretty much retired. I think Stu was probably 70 by then. And it was Hart Brothers camp in basically name only. There was one Hart brother that showed up on the first day of camp named Keith, took our money, and then we never saw him again. So it was kind of the, you know, the Hart Brothers camp with no Hart Brothers. And then there was, I remember a term that it said, you know, for the next 5 years, you have to pay 10% of all future revenues to Hart Brothers Pro Wetesting. There was a spelling mistake. So it was W-T-E-S-T-L-A. So Hart Brothers Pro Wetesting. And I remember, like, I think maybe once or twice they tried to get that, but you're signing under duress.
Sure.
First day of wrestling camp, sign this or you can't train.
Right.
And plus, you know, 10% of your first year, you're making $50 a match, and I think I had 30 matches, so I guess I owe them like $150 bucks.
You owe them dinner. You need to buy
exactly,
them a steak somewhere.
A nice dinner at the Keg in Calgary. But yeah, that was kind of, it was different back then. You know, it was an old school mentality still, even if it was 1990.
Yeah. Thank you for the tickets.
Thank
I
you,
man. Wait
Let's
to
see what
to
kind of tickets
show.
They get you. Like,
yeah,
I said,
but next time you come, though, I would love to do this again. But I get to show up with a few questions because,
sure.
Man, I'm a Beeman fan. I'm more of a wrestling fan. For you, it's all, you're so close to the trees. You probably don't see the forest.
We'll do it again, and we'll have you as the special guest, and you can interview me.
But, no, very cool. I would like
but,
to. Do
but
that.
You spend a lot of time in L.A., right?
I spent a lot of time out there.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, we'll keep in touch because I won't probably be in Portland for a while, but LA, I'm there all the time. Let's get together and we'll do it. We'll have a special Talk is Jericho with Chael Sonnen as the guest host, and you can interview me.
Cool. Okay, last question. Truly my last question. Who is your favorite wrestler of all time?
Wow. Well, now it's Shawn Michaels, my favorite one to wrestle against, and he was my favorite along with Ricky Steamboat and Owen Hart when I got into the business. But when I was starting as a fan, Hulk Hogan was my favorite.
For sure.
So it went from Hogan to the trio of quicker, smaller guys. Never got to work Owen. He passed away before I got in the business. Worked with Steamboat briefly for about 3 or 4 months. He was amazing. But Shawn Michaels to me is my all-time favorite to work with, to watch as a fan and as a guy in the business.
Good dude behind the scenes?
Yeah. Didn't used to be, apparently. Apparently he was pretty crazy back in the 90s. A lot of the guys were. But from when I met him in about 2003 onwards, he was a great guy.
Being crazy in the 90s was called blending in.
Yeah.
All right, cool, man.
All right, thanks to Chael Sonnen. I love his quote. It's a combination of cheese and jail. And did he get into the WWE? Did they let him in? Yes. And not only did they let him in, he had great tickets. He said they were four of the best seats that he ever had. So I haven't seen the show. I don't know if he was in the front row or if anybody saw him on camera, but he was definitely there and he had a great time. And he said he was a hero to, I believe, his nephew who went to the show with him. So WWE came through for Chael, even if he did give Stephanie's number away. On Off the Record. Amazing guest, and we'll have to do our interview very, very soon with Chael as the guest host interviewing me. The new Fozzy record is out. Do You Want to Start a War? Debuted at number 54 on the Billboard charts, our highest debut ever, biggest sales ever. Thanks to all of you who bought it, and thanks to all of you who are going to buy it. And you can come see us live next month when we hit the road with Theory of a Dead Man. Go to FozzyRock.com for all the gigs. That tour starts on September 17th. Big thanks to all of you as well who have been doing your online shopping through my Amazon link. Totally helps out this show and it's really easy to find. Just go to podcast1.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, and Canada, Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash, the show, so we can keep doing this for you for free twice a week. There's no extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. So, that's it. Another fun-filled edition of Talk is Jericho. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. We'll see you on Friday. We got American Idol's James Durbin coming up on the show, plus a special creepy appearance from Bray Wyatt right before SummerSlam this Sunday. You're not going to want to miss this show. We will see you on Friday, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. We'll